You're listening to The Sports Rabbi, hosted by Josh Halichman.
We're back here with the Sports Rabbi Josh Halichman. Welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show, where we bring you the best of Israeli sports all the way up north to Nahariya, down south to Eilat, and all the great cities in between, Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and many, many more. Today we have three special guests on the program. We start off with Daniel Zilberstein. He of Sport 5, the sports channel here, comes on to talk to us about a very serious subject, and athletes and mental health. He put out a four-part series on the sports channel called Alone in the Field. We have Zilberstein on to talk about this topic, which is very timely in today's day and age. I think it's a great conversation. We could have spent hours together discussing it, but I think you'll enjoy it. And I think it's a topic and a subject that we should all be very aware of. So Daniel Zilberstein's up first. Next, we have Lucas Feldhaus. Of course, he's our international, European, everything basketball expert. He comes to us from Germany. We look at Alba Berlin and Maccabi Tel Aviv this Thursday night playing in the EuroLeague. Yovel Zussman, Tamir Blatt Israelis, play for Alba Berlin. We look at their season so far, talk about the club's up and downs, and many, many other different topics with him as well. Then finally, Dov Halichman comes on board. And we talk about the Israeli Basketball League itself, the domestic league here. We talk a little bit EuroLeague, Maccabi Tel Aviv. And we talk about the Israel national team who play on Thursday night. We give you a preview about their games with Poland and then at Estonia on Sunday. Who's in, who's out, who's going to be on the roster, who's playing and who's not. We give you all the rundown on that. It's a great program. Make sure you leave us a five-star rating. Subscribe, follow us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, sportsrabbi.com, for the latest and greatest news in Israeli sports, both in English and in Hebrew. It's a great show. It's a great program. Daniel Zilberstein, he's up right now. Enjoy the show.
You're listening to The Sports Rabbi.
All right, we're back with The Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman, bringing in a very special guest right now. It is Daniel Zilberstein of Sport 5, the sport channel here in Israel. Just put on a wonderful four-part series called Levad Bemigrash, Alone in the Field, in essence, talking all about mental health and athletes. Daniel interviewed a number of athletes. If it was Idan Verd, who plays for Hapoel Tel Aviv, Oded Katash, of course, the one-time great Maccabi Tel Aviv player and coach, most recently of the Israel national team, Gal Mekel, who plays in Andorra, Yulia Glushko, a tennis player, one of the top women's players here in the country, Mayor Buzaglo, many, many other people interviewed for this project. And, of course, with the mental health becoming a very hot topic, not only around the world, it is also taken by storm here in Israel. And Daniel Zilberstein did a great job really unpacking this issue for all the viewers on Sport 5. And if you want to see it, it is on VOD, video on demand, on their website. There'll be a link in my podcast as well for that. Daniel, how are you today?
Thank you, my man, for the warm welcome, and I'm very well.
Tell me, why did you come up with this idea? How did it come about? And knowing that it is, you know, a topic that's being discussed around the world, if it's Simone Biles, Naomi Osaka, and many, many other athletes, I could probably think of many athletes that it doesn't even, we wouldn't even think of affecting, but we know that it does. How did you come up with the idea to do this program here in Israel with this four-part series?
I was, first of all, fortunate enough to be in Tokyo and seeing Simone up and close. And as an employee and a correspondent for Sport 5, I started feeling that a lot of people have a lot to say about what's going on with Simone Biles without actually knowing. And so I always like to wait and see what the athlete has to say about this subject. And I can separate, mostly I feel I can separate the truth and the BS. And I think there was a lot of BS coming from pundits, correspondents, etc. And that made me feel very bad. Mm-hmm. And the same day that everything started to unfold with Simone Biles, I got a text from Amir Weintraub, who's a tennis player, a former tennis player, who actually is part of this project, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a lot to say about experiences that he had during his career. And I was stunned by the graphic image of it. And I was moved, but I was working in Tokyo, so I couldn't really help him. So I gave him Idan Velez's phone number and I asked, what do you want me to do? And what Amir Weintraub told me was, first of all, I want you to delete everything I sent you. And and that was rough for me. I said, wow, we are really prehistoric times on this. Like, athletes do not know what to do. And especially with, I think, individual sports that are not considered like important Olympic sports. The tennis player lives by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Linoy Ashram, who was a top athlete in artistic gymnastics, or that kind of, like, the peak is the Olympics. So they have a pretty good establishment there. They know about psychologists and all that. But a tennis player is alone in the field, alone on the court, because there is no real help from the outside, and it has to come from the athlete. So a guy like Federer, or a guy like Djokovic, or a guy like Nadal, they have an entourage. They can afford that. Mm-hmm. But for a player who's ranked 170 or 250, this is a very rough environment. And so when I came back, I reached out to Amir Weintraub again, and I said, listen, we have to do something about this, because I know you're not the only one that has this problem. Maybe some have it rougher than others, but I understand that if you came out to me, there might be 10 other athletes or 20 other athletes that are ready to talk about this. Not necessarily that they have it more than others. So what happened is Amir talked to me, and we decided, okay, I'm going to give you an opportunity to speak, and I'm going to give you also an opportunity to delete everything that we did. You have a veto for this interview, which I never give anyone. Mm-hmm. I said, this is important enough for you to decide when we're done. Listen, this was too much for me. I feel like I opened up on things that are embarrassing to my family or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I started approaching other athletes. And surprisingly enough, 6 out of 6, they all said yes. None of them said, not even a question mark. I didn't know exactly what they suffered or what they are suffering, but I knew that they had something to contribute to the discussion. And then from going episode by episode with like an athlete or two per episode, I said, maybe the idea should be subjects. Like, anxiety will be one subject and individual sports will be a second subject. Mm-hmm. And then social media will be the third. Right. And the fourth one will be the day after the career. And in terms of the creation of it, I said, I have to ask all the athletes about all the subjects, and then I will be free to do whatever I want
right.
when I'm done.
It's quite amazing. I mean, the artistic work that you did in that aspect of putting it together. And I was just curious, it roughly was about 30 minutes of runtime. The episodes range from 6 to 9 minutes apiece. If you look to take it all together, it's 30 minutes. I can only imagine how much filming and interview time you really have. I mean, it must have been hours, because each athlete, if it's Oded Tatash talking about retiring, and of course the career that he went through, and it's even when he won, of course, the European Championship with Panathinaikos against his, you know, hometown team, Maccabi Tel Aviv. It is something so difficult and so precise to go into. You must have had material that could last you for another 4 episodes without a problem, Daniel.
You're right. First, I have to give a lot of credit to Liat Mikhailov, who did all the video with me and the editing. And I think I can solve your dilemma here. It's 6 hours of rough material. And I had to listen to everything by myself because I thought if I give someone else the logging part of it, they might miss nuances that I remember from mm-hmm. watching it again. And yeah, sure, I can do another season easy now. But the idea was not to weigh too much because mm-hmm. for at the beginning, I said to myself, listen, this is for a documentary. You have to go big. You have to go an hour or 50 minutes or 45, whatever. But then I thought someone might come before me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to start working and realizing in 2 months that five athletes have already talked about it. Because mm-hmm. I felt like something is happening anyway. It's not only my beautiful smile that convinced the athletes to talk. It's like it's this time in history. If I sound a little bombastic, there was the right time for athletes to step forward and say, okay, here's my story. And you can see now a lot of people, the interviews are changing in a way, which makes me happy that I contributed to something. Leo Eliau was also a mega, mega star in Israeli basketball and made huge amounts of money and won a championship in Spain, not with Barcelona or Real Madrid, but with Tau Vitoria, mm-hmm. which was amazing at the time. He had an unbelievable career, and all he heard was, you're not doing enough. For years and years, you're lazy, you're that, you should shoot threes, you should whatever. And he had a great career. And nobody allowed him to be happy about it. And he opened up about anxiety, about a lot of other things. I don't think this would have happened if it wasn't for the project.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's the significance of it. It will be okay for an athlete, not necessarily to talk about it with the media, but to talk about it with his friend, to talk about it in the locker room, to speak to a therapist if he feels it's necessary. It opened up a little bit.
Of course, we're on here with Daniel Silverstein, Sport 5, the sport channel here in Israel, the special mental health four-part project that we're talking about, available on VOD on their website. Link is attached in this article, of course. You know, two things that really struck me was Mauro Bozzaglo speaking, which, you know, Mauro Bozzaglo is the, you know, the ball family, if you want to call it, for the people that are listening in the United States. Of course, you know, Mauro Bozzaglo with his own TV show, The Bozzaglos, and his father, and always out there. And then all of a sudden, you see a different Mauro Bozzaglo, who is contrite, trying to understand his spot, how to deal with issues that he's been going through, who's somebody that's very comfortable in front of a camera on a regular basis, opening up. I mean, how did you find that experience for yourself?
It was unbelievable for me, both because I didn't know Bozzaglo that well. I interviewed him before. We kind of talked from time to time. But every time that I sit with him, I understand he's a lot smarter, a lot more sophisticated than people realize. He's way ahead of everybody else.
Oh,
he was
for
way
sure.
ahead of everybody else in terms of using television, in terms of social media. He might be like the most successful Israeli athlete with regard to social mm-hmm. media. It created so many platforms for him to influence, to make money, for other reasons that I think people didn't understand how good he is on the outside. Because he has a career ready for him now. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of athletes in Israel have that when they're in their 30s. So talking to him made me realize, A, that sometimes a celebrity is needed for this type of project. Mm-hmm. Reaching out to not only tennis players, but also football players or soccer players, as we call them here. Soccer players, like soccer being the number one sport here by mm-hmm. far. And also reaching out to players who are active was important for me. And he still refers to himself as a professional soccer player. He is not on the retiring. He doesn't feel like retirement is ready yet for him. I don't know if he will play soccer again, but that was also a part of the day after episode for me. Mm-hmm. The fact that he has not played professional soccer for so long and he still thinks that he's a soccer player, it's difficult to detach that. And
it's
that
really
was fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. We see that so many times. You see players that even Lior Eliyahu, you just mentioned, It took him a long time to come out and say, yes, I'm not, you know, I'm retired. We knew already that he wasn't playing over the last couple of years, really. And it just, it's that mental barrier to cross over. And of course, Mauro Bozzaglo now on TV on Sport 5 as an analyst on the match of the week, on the game of the week in the Israeli Soccer League. And it was funny because the first time he was on TV, I thought he was actually awful. I thought he was horrendous, and I'm thinking, this is a guy that's constantly on TV. The second time, it was a totally different Mauro Bozzaglo.
I remember
Rotem Israel, who's one of the great TV announcers today, who's really got her start in sports. I remember the first time she did the sports show, the sports news, she was all over the place. She was looking in the wrong camera. I remember it being on TV, and I was like, wow, she's having a really rough time. But by episode two already, she was like in like Flynn and perfect. And now, of course, she's one of the top people, not only on the Sport Channel, but on other channels as well. Even that's a mental block. It's really quite amazing. The other story...
It's probably inevitable. I'm sorry to step in like that, but it's probably inevitable. Even for a guy who knows everything and he's been there so many times, it's like for a tennis player, like serve number million of your career, if it's a serve that wins a game, is more difficult. And you've been there so many times and it doesn't really matter.
It's really amazing. The other person that I had a personal attachment to over the last decade was Vicky Peretz. I worked with him when I was working at Maccabi Tel Aviv, when I was in charge of the charitable foundation that I helped found for the club. Vicky had been looking to get back into the club, and he kept saying, Josh, you have to bring me in, Josh, bring me in. And we were able to work something out, of course, with the youth department. He came back in, and little by little, he was doing a lot of, he was doing some speaking engagements for the foundation as well. I left a few years ago from Maccabi Tel Aviv. But Vicky Peretz is somebody that I had been in touch with. And when, of course, he passed tragically away, we'll say he committed suicide. Of course, it was never publicly mentioned. That really was struck me very hard because I had seen these. When you work with somebody, you see, I don't even know how to describe it, Daniel, but you see these things that he wanted to be part of a team. People want to be wanted. People want to be loved. People still want to be part of the action, even though they were great, successful soccer players. It was very difficult for him. It was very, very difficult for him not being a part. And he needed to play a certain role. If it was speaking to 100 youngsters that came in from the United States, or if it was going to a kibbutz and working with a number of soccer teams in the Beit Shemesh area, it was such a necessary thing for him. And it was just very tragic, his end. I watching that part was very striking for me in the program.
Josh, being forgotten is a terrible feeling. And I think that's part of the day after stardom. Because in the 5-10 years after, you're still around. But then people don't recognize you as much. And people start introducing you to other people and saying this guy was great once and all that. It's a difficult feeling. Luckily, my sport career was very limited, so I'd never felt like a star, and then not anymore. But Vicky's son, who's also a professional soccer player, Omer. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to be part of this series as well, and he decided at the end that it's just too much for him. So basically, as I told you before, 6 out of 6 agreed, but then a lot of people started contacting me, athletes, and saying, I want to open up. I said, listen, the project is done, but if you feel like it's really necessary for you, we'll see what happens, and maybe we'll add it. And when I started talking to Omer Peretz, Vicky's son, I really wanted him to be part of the series. And that's why I left at least a minute or almost a minute of talking about this, even though he decided that the interview is not a good time for him. It's not a good time for an interview for him. But he opened up a lot of, I'm trying to remember, I think it was maybe over 10 years ago, but Omer was one of the first ones that talked about his depression and talked about bulimia, even when he played for Strasbourg in the academy, the youth academy of Strasbourg, where his father played professionally. And he started having a lot of problems because of this pressure that he was not ready to deal with yet. And he was also one of those athletes that heard from dusk till dawn, why are you not like your father? Will you ever be like your father? Which is also like, if I do a second season, part of it will surely be about sons of, sons and daughters of, because I think that's unexplored territory.
You know, you look at this, the depression, the outside pressures, the inside pressures, which then leads you down these horrible roads that we saw with Vicky Peretz. There are places that people can reach out to for help. And we just saw this now. I don't know if you're familiar with the story of Carey Price. Carey Price is the goaltender for the Montreal Canadiens Hockey Club. One of the greatest athletes in his profession, at his position, top of the line, playing in Montreal, of course, which is a hockey hotbed where the pressure is immense, takes the team on his shoulders. They go to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. They lose. He has a minor surgery over the summer, and then it comes out right before training camp about 2 months ago. He says, I have to check myself into the NHLPA, the Players Association program, to work out some issues that I'm having right now. And he came out, he was there for 30 days, just came out of it this past week, and said that there was substance abuse, and apparently it had been happening for a long while, and he had to clean that up. What I thought about immediately is that 20, 30 years ago, when I was watching athletes, if you were having a drug problem, there was no NHLPA or, you know, different players associations or different people that you could reach out to. They didn't exist. If you were caught doing drugs, you could land up in jail. You could be traded, as a number of players I remember back in the day. Your careers could be taken off the rails. If you're looking at baseball players, like if it's a Dwight Gooden, a Daryl Strawberry, Tim Raines, some of the greats, some even in the Hall of Fame now. And you look at all these different sports, and on one hand, it's great that an association has a program that can take these people in and that they can go and say, listen, I need help. The difficult part is, I think that it's very hard for the general public to relate to it still, because they look at these athletes and some of the Carey Price, who's making $10 million a year, and that's their job, is to produce. Their job is to go and be a goaltender and take their team to the highest of heights, and at any cost. How do you put those two things together, Daniel? It is so, so difficult.
Josh, people need heroes. That's part of the problem. Like, you see a guy on TV and he's an NBA player and you see a mountain of muscles. They look perfect on their Instagram pages, or only the perfect moments, the dunking over three people, the three pointer with a finger in your face or whatever. All of that combined creates a product that is, I think it's almost impossible to sustain. They're special, that's true, but they're not superhumans. We keep on using these expressions. This guy is not human, or the other guy is Superman, or whatever. And then when you see that they're just a human being, human beings like me, like you, better looking, better athletes, but just special people, but people, that creates a conflict. The money part is, you're right. It's you put your finger on the right thing, like, someone can talk about their problems, but for some spectators, for some viewers, is shut up and dribble. Like, that's the response that they get. What do you want? You're making in a day what I'm making in 10 years. How can you bitch about it? That's what they say. So these people, for me, I'm not trying to convince them. I'm trying to convince the normal people that it's time to normalize the subject, that it will be okay to talk about this. and not necessarily for me to get the next celebrity athlete to come over and talk about everything and cry on camera and all that. No, for them to be able to discuss it however they want, but not to keep that, not to keep it in.
It's really phenomenal. Daniel Zilberstein, of course, Sport 5, the sports channel here in Israel, again, put together this fabulous four-part series, Labad Bamigrash, Alone in the Field. We're going to have the link to that in this podcast article. I want to thank Daniel for spending so much time. We could probably sit for days and days and days talking about the subject. The questions and answers can be absolutely phenomenal on both sides. Daniel Zilberstein, if people want to reach out to you, where can they do that? I know you're on social media, you're on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle that people can send you messages?
Well, Josh, thank you very much, first of all, for all the compliments. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And Dan Zilb is my name, D-A-N-Z-I-L-B. You can find me easy. And a lot of people have been reaching out, and I like to be the person that refers to everybody and talks to everybody, and I don't mind being a shrink without being a shrink. I will always find the right people for these athletes, because some of them are really unschooled and just don't know what to do, and they can always reach out to me, and I'm always available.
This is wonderful. Again, there'll be links, everything in the podcast article. I want to thank you so much for coming on with the Sports Rabbi today.
Thanks again, Josh.
You're listening to the Sports Rabbi.
All right, we're back here with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Allen. Welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show, Holy Land Hoops, where we bring you the best of Israeli basketball, all the way up north to Nahariya, down south to Eilat, and all the great cities in between. And boy, of course, we have another great guest coming on board here right now with the Sports Rabbi. Hope you enjoyed the first part of the program. Of course, Daniel Zilberstein came on board to talk about mental health and the athlete, which was really an intriguing conversation, which could go on for hours and hours. And we'll definitely love to have Daniel Zilberstein back. But right now we are welcoming on a frequent flyer with the program. It is none other than our German basketball expert, international expert, European expert based in Germany, Lukas Feldhaus. How are you today, Lukas? What's going on?
Great to be back on your show. Thanks for the nice introduction again. I'm fine.
All right, great. And, you know, of course, why would we have you on right now specifically? Well, it's because Maccabi Tel Aviv visits Alba Berlin in EuroLeague action. Maccabi Tel Aviv with a 7-4 record visits Germany as they look to improve on their place in the standings. Alba Berlin not having exactly a more successful year. They're 3-8. I think that was pretty much expected that they would not be having such a great year. But Lukas, what were the expectations for Alba Berlin going into the season? Did you think after 11 game days we'd be at 3-11 with this Alba Berlin team, which is a pretty young team?
Actually, I would have expected that because you said that it's a very young team, and you have to see that they make huge changes to their core, actually. It was like they always lost one or two key players, maybe two or three key players. But this season, it's like some of their main core actually moved to different teams or don't coach right now. Like Coach Aito, who has been actually coined the foundation of what Alba Berlin has done for the last 4 years. Then you lost Peyton Siva, who's been with the team for 5 years, and Niels Giffey, who is actually from Berlin and who's been the captain for many, many years. So there have been a lot of changes actually to the core. So I think it's not surprising that in EuroLeague they're struggling a little bit, or not just a little bit. They're losing games, but it's not unexpected. It was rather unexpected a bit that they already lost three games in the BBL. But I think it's not really unexpected because of the changes, and at least they made it to the Final Four. So I think what they did in all competitions is actually what I guess they expected kind of and what I expected.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you think any of that, Lucas, has been because of the change in coach at near the beginning of the season? Of course, Anton Rensis retires. Israel Gonzalez comes in. Do you think that played a factor with this at all about, maybe that they thought they would have done better? Do you think the record would be any better with Aito in control? Or it's really, really the same, yeah. It's 6-1, half a dozen and the other?
It's really difficult to say. If you look at last season, I think they also started slowly in the EuroLeague. It's always with Alba Berlin, but actually with any other team, but especially with Alba, who is a low budget team in the EuroLeague. They lose core players, key players every season, and especially this season, it was like they made huge changes actually to the core. Mm-hmm. Not only that, they lost two main anchors, cornerstones to the system in Nils Giffey and Peyton Siever, but they also lost the finals MVP, Jason Granger, BBL finals MVP. They have to find a new core, actually, players stepping up. Mm-hmm. Players having to take different roles. Also, Simone Fontecchio, he left, of course. And I think it would have been difficult for Coach Aito, too, at this point, to start off well. I think Coach Aito is very special. He's actually a legend in European basketball. And maybe with his aura, with his style of coaching, it might be that they would have won this or that game, but it's very difficult to predict. It would be, I think, it in this situation where Alba is in, it would have been difficult for any coach to get into that EuroLeague adventure which actually never stops. You have so many games, right. So it's difficult to develop a team.
Lucas, of course, we're on here with Lucas Feldhaus, our European basketball expert. Lucas, looking at Alba Berlin and some of the new players that they did bring in, two of those players happen to be Israelis. One player used to play for Maccabi Tel Aviv and Yovel Zussman. The other played for Hapoel Jerusalem and Tamir Blatt. What have, been their showing so far? Let's start with Yovel Zussman a little bit. For the fans that have followed him here, of course, in Israel, very familiar with Yovel Zussman, played for Maccabi Tel Aviv, played for a number of seasons. We saw him grow up through the system. I think it was a shock to many that Maccabi let him go. I think it was more of a case that it wasn't that they let him go. It was more the case that he wanted to go. I think he felt that he had potentially maxed out where he saw his standing at Maccabi Tel Aviv, at least under Coach Yannis Varopoulos. And he felt that he needed to go somewhere else in order to, I guess, improve his standing. From a statistical standpoint, he's playing more minutes, he's more responsibility, but from the offensive numbers, we see the same thing. And again, after speaking to many NBA scouts and many people around Israel, the number one issue seems to always come back to a word that starts with the letter A, and that is aggressiveness, that he just isn't aggressive enough, and he doesn't take the chances when he's given it to him. He's good on defense. He's going to give you solid minutes on defense, and he's, that's his bread and butter, the way he plays. But when it comes offensively, it's just he can shoot the three. He can shoot. He can drive. He can slash. He can do all those things. But he's tentative, and he doesn't take that step. And we, unfortunately, at least from the person like myself in here in Israel, watching him from afar, not the way you watch him almost every minute that he's played, sees the same Yovel Zussman that we saw with Maccabi Tel Aviv. So your initial thoughts on the first few months of Yovel Zussman's time with Alba?
Yeah, I think you summed it up very well, because it's difficult to say, actually. I mean, when they signed him, he was like signed in the place of Simone Fontecchio. They always had good players at the three position. They brought him in for the three position in Maccabi. With Maccabi, he played maybe in some games more of the two position. And Alba Berlin has a great, great track record, actually, in terms of big or taller wing players like Simone Fontecchio. Mm-hmm. They had Giedraitis. They are both on the roster of Baskonia right now. They had Rigonis at the three position too. And with all those players, actually, it was like they made their next step with Alba Berlin. I think with Grigonis and Gutierrez, at least it was like they already produce on a very, very solid level on the teams they were before. And but Simone Fontecchio was actually also an example for a player who didn't play that big of a role, actually. And he even came from a team which was far away from EuroLeague level, actually, in Italy. And yeah, with Yuval Zuzman, I think they hoped, or they are hoping, actually, that he can develop into the same direction. And they actually used him for a similar place. Alba Berlin likes to play this off-screen basketball with many off-ball screens, off-ball movement. And he hasn't done a good job actually with that. And in the last games, they didn't really use him that much in that position anymore, because when he got into those situations at the beginning of the season, he was not that efficient. He didn't really, he had sometimes problems like coordinatively, or when he saw a body in front of him, he got hesitant. So his role actually diminished a little bit on the offensive end. And I think right now he's quite where he was with Maccabi, a great defender. He's earning his minutes, a versatile defender who can play the four, the three, the two, and the one on defense. But on offense, he's like a little bit hesitant, especially when he drives, for example. He tends to look too much for his teammates. You can also look at his free throw rates. He only averaged 1.1 free throw per game, and I think that's very low. And his shot hasn't been consistent either. So his offensive development actually is like a little bit decreasing. So he will have to step up. His effort is perfect, but he's now playing the same basketball he's been playing with Maccabi.
So now we move over to Tamir Blatt. So obviously, Tamir Blatt played with Hapoel Jerusalem, a point guard, obviously played extremely well here for the Reds under Oded Kataj, in a system that was specifically built really for him. I mean, it was literally he could run the pick and rolls. He would shoot off screens. He was always put into prime position by Oded Kataj. Obviously, going to a different team, he's not going to have the same luxury and comfortability that he did have under Oded. That obviously is being seen. You could see that obviously in the minutes that he's played. You can see that in his statistical analysis. Watching some games, however, I have seen him improve. And where I'm saying that is, I see it that he is making more passes. He's moving the ball around more. He's getting more into the offensive flow. We have an interview. Big story here. We have a big interview coming out with Jaylene Smith. That will be out, of course, on the morning of the EuroLeague game, both in English and in Hebrew. And Jaylene spoke about Tamir Blatt, and he also spoke about Yovel Zussman. He spoke about Alba. He spoke about Islam German. It's a really super interesting interview. We should also remember that there was talk last year that Jaylene Smith was going to be moved to Hapoel Jerusalem, that he was going to be a Hapoel Jerusalem player. That ended up not happening, but it was very, very close to happening. We spoke about that as well. So he spoke about Tamir and how he is just a superb passer, and that everybody has to keep their eyes open and on their toes, because they never know when the ball is going to come to them. He feels that Tamir sees things 2-3 passes before they happen. And I think there's no bigger credit you can give to a point guard when you're hearing that from a teammate. The fact that, you have to always be aware that the ball can come to you at any single moment. And when we've started to see that a little bit, Lucas, in the last number of games, haven't we?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Yovel Zussman's development is rather stagnant or even rather decreasing, I think Tamir's development is quite good. He has earned and gained more confidence, I think, in his game. I think Alba Berlin's game is not that. It's difficult. It's different from what Jerusalem played, but they also like to play at a high pace, and I think that also benefits his game because he can really. He has a great court vision. He can really see things in advance, and he can really push the ball and find open teammates in transition. I think. With him, the problem is a little bit in half court, creating paint touches, getting to the paint. But that's nothing which is surprising, actually, because did he do that with Jerusalem many times? No, not really. I mean, he is a player in half court who relies on pick and roll, who has good court vision. I mean, he's a really creative, fancy passer, actually, with his bounce passes. And he can also play the pass through the opponent's legs on occasions. So he's actually a really flashy player. But the question mark is, of course, his physicality and his ability to get to the paint. And also look at this, his free throw rate as well. I mean, he's averaging 0.8 free throws per game. That's something.
Yeah, he doesn't want to pick up contact. We saw that. I remember you sent me a video of how he had a free lane to the basket and he then held off. That's something that he never drove to the basket for Bull Jerusalem. Like, you knew that was never going to happen. That was never part of his game. And if he came, into the paint a little bit, he was going to put up a little floater. That was what was going to happen. He didn't know what to do with himself all of a sudden there, Lucas.
Yeah, I think that sequence is actually like that could be a classic. But he's really hesitant in those situations. I mean, he's not tall. He's not amazingly quick. He is quick, but not amazingly quick. And he's a little bit limited in that area. But he could do better. I think you mentioned the floater. That's something he could implement more in order to be more dangerous on drives. I think overall, Alba Berlin's problem so far is a little bit that they cannot play the same way as last season. Last season, they had two experienced guards in Peyton Siva and Jason Granger,
right,
who are all-rounders actually on pick and roll. And right now they have Maodo Lo and Tamir Blatt, but Maodo Lo is more a scoring guard. Mm-hmm. He had many games where he played more the two position last season. And I think they lack a little bit that lead point guard. And that's also something which makes Tamir Blatt look a little bit, not bad, but not really impressive so far, that he doesn't really have a lead point guard ahead of him. Mm-hmm. I mean, Maodo Lo does a great job too, but he's not that guy actually who is a floor general and who can really make decisions that as quickly as Jason Granger or Peyton Siva. They're lacking a little bit like those players who can create advantages without dribbling the ball so much. So their identity is a little bit different from what it was last season, and the roads have yet to be found a little bit or have yet to be fulfilled better on a higher level. So Tamir Blatt is actually not really benefiting from that situation.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we're on here with Lucas Feldos talking about Alba Berlin as they get ready for Maccabi Tel Aviv. So right now, let's talk about the Alba Berlin that's going to play Maccabi Tel Aviv. And on paper, Maccabi Tel Aviv is by far the more talented team. They have the better players. They're, you know, on paper, this should be an easy walkover win for Maccabi Tel Aviv. But of course, that's on paper. Who are the players that Maccabi fans and Maccabi Tel Aviv have to worry about for Alba Berlin that can damage Maccabi, that could cause problems for them, and that have been, you know, they're, I guess they're all around better players this season?
I think they have at least two players, maybe three players, who are really their clear cornerstones. The one player actually by far is Luke Sigma, who is actually the key, the heart of the team, a playmaker, a creative passer, high post creator. He is a glue guy, actually, the glue guy on the roster. Then they have Maodolo, who is actually their best creator among the guards. He's also not really the player like Jason Granger or Peyton Siva. He's not that guy who can create for his teammates on a consistent basis. I even feel like they could sign that kind of player with the course of that season, which could hurt Terry Blatt as well a little bit, but we will see. So Maodo and Luke Sigma, then they got Oscar Da Silva, who's also been a great player for them so far, pick and roll presence, a lob finisher. He's really quick. He has good moves. And another guy who really who returns is from his injury, Marcus Ericsson. He is a great shooter. And Alba Berlin has been struggling with shooting so far. In general, they've been struggling so far on offense. So he's also a player who has high responsibility. So those four players are, in my opinion, their key players at this point. Of course, they will hope that Jaden Smith can fulfill that role as well, but he has yet to adjust to the new level.
So what is your prognosis for the game, Lucas?
Well, Alba Berlin can surprise teams sometimes. I mean, when you look at the game against Kazan, they were in the lead, like they were up by 20 points in the first half. They tried to push the pace. They tried to be creative. Also, I like the aura actually of Coach Israel Gonzalez. He also has this, he is calm, trusts his players, and you really see the players, they like this the style, and in certain situations you can really see that they play without pressure. I think you can see that less than last season, where they had a little bit more confidence in the roles, and also it was also due to the personnel. But I think if Maccabi thinks it's going to be an easy test, it could be that Alba Berlin is off to a great start to the game. But realistically seen, I think Alba is by far the underdog, and I wouldn't be surprised if Maccabi would win this game by a bigger margin, like 15 points or
right.
So.
Yeah. You see, the three wins that they've had, Alba, have been against Fenerbahce, who are awful. It's hard to say that. You know, it's very hard to say that Fenerbahce are awful, but they're awful. Red Star, who are also awful, but Maccabi Tel Aviv found a way to lose to them at home. That was shocking. You know, before the season started, Lucas, we sat down with the schedule, and Maccabi, we figured, had to go 5-2 in the first seven games. The seventh game of that stretch was against Barcelona. So we figured the two losses were going to be home against Barcelona and away at Milano. So away at Milano happened. That was, you know, pretty much predetermined. And then they lost to Red Star. But they ended up beating Barcelona, so they ended up finishing 5-2. So at the end of the day, they were okay. But that was a loss. It's like, you know, why are you losing? And then they lost to Žalgiris, and they beat Žalgiris, who everybody seems to be beating Žalgiris except for Panathinaikos. So yeah. that's the way it is over there. The Maccabi Tel Aviv, of course, to me, it should be about a 15-point winner, if not more, in this game. But, you know, who knows? They're going to be, by the way, there are reports that there's going to be over 1,000 Israelis at that game. supporting Maccabi Tel Aviv. So it may be very similar to a Maccabi Tel Aviv home game in Berlin. So we'll see. We're looking forward to that, of course, on Thursday night. While we have you on board here, Lucas, for a couple minutes, very briefly, talk about two other Israelis playing their trade in Germany. One is Max Heidegger, who's playing for Oldenburg right now, is currently injured, so he has not played the last number of games. Now, the second player is David Cohn, who plays in the second division. People here are saying, David Cohn, that's a nice Jewish name. Hold on a minute. When did he play in Israel? Well, he played in Israel in the first division for Apollo a lot a few years ago, and then he played in the second division as well, and it kind of fell off the radar screen, but he's been having a superb season so far. Let's just start off with David Cohn. Tell us who he's playing for and a little bit about the competition and what you can say about the second division and a little bit about David Cohn. Has been a very pleasant surprise so far.
Yeah, David Cohn is playing for Schwenningen in German D2. They are an ambitious team, actually. They want to make the playoffs, maybe try to go for home court advantage. They are now in eighth place with a 5-4 record. And David Cohn actually came late to the team in preseason. He came for a player who also played in Israel and Israeli D2, Lamonte Bearden. Mm-hmm. And David Cohn came like 1 week before the season started. They struggled a little bit in preseason, and they lost the first game without him. But when he came, he actually changed everything. I mean, he has played many minutes, 37 minutes per game, actually by far the player, I think, at this point with the most playing time in the whole league. The league, the competition is like, it's definitely not on the same level as the Winter League, mm-hmm. but it's not that bad. For example, players like Tyron Nash, who played in Israel many years ago, he's not that dominant in that league. He's a solid player, like 10 or 11 points per game. And it's like it's competitive, but it's not that physical. And it's also, it's similar actually to the Israeli competition, not that physical, but also not that much quality actually as the Winter League. But I think it's better than the Israeli D2, I would say, from what I saw when I watched players there. I think he's been amazing, actually. I mean, 14 points per game, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, only 3 turnovers, and 37 minutes per game. Great numbers from the field, 60% from 2-point range, 40%. 3-point range. Last two games they had blowout losses. They really lost, but overall they are on a good track. And the coach of Schwenningen, he likes to give a lot of responsibility to the key players, and he is one of those key players. And I think that's a season actually David Cohn can really benefit from. He's running the pick and roll. He's their floor general. I think he has a very impressive combination of passing on pick and roll and shooting the ball. His coach compared him even to Steve Nash in that regard. Mm-hmm. He's actually the Steve Nash of German D2 so far. On defense, I think he's really struggling because he's not really, he's thin. Actually, but I think it's a great season for him so far. He's slowed down the last two games where he was not really good, but overall he's impressive, and he could really have the opportunity to move up next season, maybe even with Schwenningen, who knows. But if not, then maybe play in Winter League next season.
Well, that would be good. And our friend Max Heidegger, they give us the rundown on him.
It's a very difficult season for Oldenburg. They're last in the standings and want to make the semifinals actually in the BBL. They're 1-3 in Basketball Champions League. They still have the chance to advance, but they have to win the next few games. I think the tone is much more on the BBL competition right now, as they are last in the standings. He's been scoring the ball solidly. I mean, he had some games where he had 20 points or more, but his role is a little bit questionable, I would say. He's the main scorer. They don't really have natural pick and roll players, and he's forcing a little bit shots and taking very, very difficult shots, not on the highest percentages every game, so they're a little bit reliant on if he makes his shots on some games or if he doesn't, but he's playing with 100% effort. And I think if they make some roster changes in terms of having a point guard who can create more for others and for himself, just a better point guard in terms of creating, I think Max Heidegger could benefit. Right now it's a little bit difficult with his role and team success, which is not there, but I think he definitely shows that he can compete on this level, on a very, very solid level, and even more if they can fix the things which are not fitting right now on their roster. He's now mm-hmm. injured, actually. He has a muscle fiber, torn muscle fiber, so we will see when he will be back, but I like him, actually. I think his role is not perfect.
Right. All right. There you have it. Lukas Feltos, our European international German basketball expert. Where can people find you? Where can people reach out to you?
Well, on Twitter, it's Feilchenfeuer in German.
I'll have the link in there, folks. Okay. You'll be able to just click on the link and you can find him. Don't worry about that.
That's
there you have it. Lukas Feltos, an honor and pleasure to have you on board with us today. Thanks for coming on board and spending some time with us.
Pleasure for me too. Thanks.
You're listening to the Sports Rabbi.
All right, we're back with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Halleckman. Of course, welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show, Holy Land Hoops. We're bringing you the best of Israeli basketball all around the country of Israel. We just had on Lukas Feltos. Want to thank him for coming on board. We talked all about Alba Berlin, Maccabi Tel Aviv. Of course, Alba Berlin and Maccabi are meeting up in EuroLeague action in Germany on Thursday night. And we previewed that game and talked all about Yovel Zussman, Tamir Blatt, all the Israelis playing in Germany as well. Lots of fun with Lukas. Now we bring on Dov Halleckman, of course, our ace photographer, and also our analyst here on the podcast. He comes on every week to talk about the Israeli Basketball League. We'll talk about that as well as the Israel national team. They are going to be playing on Thursday night as well, right before Maccabi Tel Aviv. They will be playing Poland in national team action, World Cup qualifying, and then on Sunday they go and fly to Estonia and play there in a qualifier on Sunday as well. Dov, how you doing today?
Doing good. What's up?
Doing great, doing fine, doing wonderful. Everything is good here in Jerusalem, in the Holy City. Let's get right to it. Maccabi Tel Aviv, they had a league game this week, coming off of a very poor performance at Olympiacos, which basically was a wipeout from the first quarter. Thankfully, it was Shabbat, and many of us did not have the opportunity to sit through a disaster of a game where they scored less than 10 points in that first quarter and gave up 35. So we won't talk too much about that Olympiacos game. Maccabi Tel Aviv came back strong, very strong, I should say, and beat up on poor Rishon LeZion. They basically blasted them 86-56. If they really wanted to, though, they could have won by 60 points. I mean, really, it was that type of game. The good things that came out of it is that a ton of Israelis played a ton of minutes, and that's really good because it's exactly what the doctor ordered for Guy Gudas. Guy Gudas, Yanis Feropoulos. Good for Guy Gudas also, because Guy Gudas is getting Jaycon Yevtachziv, who played 20 minutes apiece out there. So that's definitely good news for him. He's getting players that actually played some minutes finally. And that's just good to get those players into, you know, a regular type of rotation. I asked Yanis after the game, I said, I know we've talked about the preseason, but I said, you know, the preseason really has had its effect on the rest of the rotation, where you didn't have a chance to really trust players to play minutes. At least this game, Rishon, really was what you would say is the doctor ordered, though.
Yeah, I mean, Maccabi got blown out Friday night, and then Maccabi blew out another, a different team this week, which was kind of a vengeance game. I feel bad for Rishon LeZion, I got to say that. But Maccabi Tel Aviv, we know what they're capable of. They have a good roster. And I'm happy to see Oz Blazer get serious minutes and basically be the MVP of the game.
Yeah, he played very well. And listen, Oz Blazer is a good pro player. I like him. He's always positive. Plays well, played well. Again, I think it was just good all together that Giannis did not have to play Scotty Wilbeck in so many minutes like he did against Ayelot, 44. And then he had to play him 33 minutes against Monaco. And then, you know, he came in and like the tank was on empty by the time they got to Olympiacos. I feel bad for the fans that flew out there for the game. It was just a disaster. I do not see that happening when they play Alba Berlin later on this week. Dove, I mean, yeah, Lucas and I were saying that, I mean, Maccabi is going to win this game. You'd think by at least 15 on paper, they are a major favorite. Alba Berlin has only won three games. They beat Red Star, Žalgiris, as well as Fenerbahce, all, you know, weak teams. It's hard to say Fenerbahce is a weak team, but they are. Red Star, a team that Maccabi lost to somehow. But you know, they're just not a very good team. I mean, Maccabi Tel Aviv, if they show up seriously, and I'm sure they will, they, you know, they are looking to get another victory in your league to move the record to 8-4, Dove.
Yeah, I mean, I think Alba Berlin away game is a real opportunity for Maccabi to capitalize and get an important, important win that they really need after losing, because the EuroLeague is always about bouncing back as fast as you can. And once you bounce back, then you're back in the picture, especially when Maccabi, I really believe, has a realistic chance to get a playoff spot this year. And this is one of those games that they have to win.
You got to win. This was on paper before the season. You put down a W on this game. Like, you just put it down. You put an L next to Olympiacos. You put a W by Monaco. Put a W by Alba Berlin. This is a box that they just have to check off. They got to go in there. They got to take the victory and move on. Credit to Maccabi Tel Aviv. Two players were released in Jay Coney and Tzach Ziv, who we alluded to just a minute ago with you know, Guy Gudas being happy that they played all kinds of minutes because they're in better shape than they were. They're going to be available for both games, as I mentioned with Lucas. And then you're going to get John DiBartolomeo and Roman Sorkin for the back end of those games. Talk about Rishon for a minute. They're going through a horrible time. Only one win this season. Guy Gudas is under a lot of pressure with his club. Obviously, the national team coach has a little bit more important things to worry about for the next week or so. And those are those national team games to the blue and white. Chairman, though, Itzhak Perry has decided that he's going to go on a full force media tour, basically saying that Guy Gudas should, you know, hand in the keys to the car and resign. You know, they have that he should just, he's not going to fire him because he knows if he fires him, he's going to have to pay all kinds of severance because he has him there for at least another year as well after this. And he doesn't want to fire him. But he wants him to resign so they can, you know, like Rami Hadar resigned, and we'll get to that in a minute as well, and Bol Be'er Sheva. Guy Gudas is not going to resign, and he still wants to make changes. There's talk that Daryl Monroe is going to come in. There's talk that there was Morris Watson was a potential player coming in. There's a lot of different things that can happen here, but Itzhak Perry is, let's say, is making his voice known throughout the Israeli basketball world right now, Dove.
Yeah, it sure seems like it for sure.
So let's just move on. You know, maybe I was debating, should we go to the national team? We should finish the league off. Let's continue with the league. I think that's the best thing to do here. Once we're already on the league, let's go for it. Hapoel Tel Aviv, 88-62 winners over Hapoel Eilat down by the Red Sea. Hapoel Tel Aviv with a very, very nice victory over here. James Young, 18 points. Idan Zalmanson, 16. 14 for J.P. Toccato, a dozen for Bartimore, Jacoban Brown with 9 points. They just played a very good game. Eilat, on the other hand, is still trying to find an identity. I mean, I feel like it's a revolving door of players over there. Alex Hamilton coming in is going to have to share the ball now with Brian Allen. Brian Allen, we see him score, 300 points against Maccabi, and he scored a total of 3 points against Hapoel Tel Aviv. Alex Hamilton getting a ton of minutes. Christian Doolittle got a ton of minutes. He came in also. Everything was out of sync over there. Souf Ben Moshe, 19 points. Justin Patton, 10. Everything was all over the place because Ariel Ben-Halachmi now has to get these players minutes, and he got to get them into the rotation. And it just seems they keep making change after change after change. And on one hand, it's good that they're making these changes, right, because they're trying to make their team stronger, and I give them a lot of credit. On the other hand, it's very hard. And it's very, very difficult for players to get into a swing and a rhythm when you have so many new players and a revolving door of guys coming in and out over there, Hapoel Eilat. And they are 2-5. And not the dream start that Ariel Beit Halakhmi was thinking was going to be there, Dov.
Yeah, I'd like to see how Alex Hamilton will shape up for them. I think that could be a real defining aspect for this team moving forward this season. But yeah, for sure, disappointing. And I have to admit, Eilat has a status in the league now that it's surprising when they lose to a team under them in the table, just because they have a really good home court and because they're a very competitive team.
Yeah, 100% of Tel Aviv. Got to see Danny Franco yesterday. Spoke to him for a little bit at the Israel national team practice. Of course, they are playing at the Hapoel Tel Aviv Arena, the drive-in. So Jacobin Brown was there. Raz Adam was there. Raz Adam sends regards to the Sports Rabbi crew, you should all know. So spoke to him for a few minutes. Just schmoozing. I'll tell you this, Danny Franco, boy, feels a lot better. The man looks his color back in his face. He looks good. He seems much calmer. His team's 3-4. Seems to be happy. A little bit of a winning streak is always good. Always with the doctor order there, Dove, for him.
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
Yeah, so that's good news over there. Beer Sheva, 73-61. They fall to Hapoel Galil Elyon at home. Now, of course, the big news out of that game is that Rami Hadar resigned. Not that they're having a brutal year. They've lost, unfortunately, games that they really should have won, but Beer Sheva is only 3-4. It's not that they're in disaster zone cases, but it's clearly a situation here where Rami wanted to make changes. He was not allowed to make those changes by the board. And he said, you know what? If I can't make changes and I can't do what I need to do with this team, I'm going to hand you the keys to the car and I'm out of here. In that game, Siobhan Lewis, 17 points. Nimrod Levy, 13. Aguirre-Abu, 11. They played with only three foreigners, Galil Elyon did, and they just signed Jonathan Stove. So he comes in. Great story about Jonathan Stove, actually, that he's actually been out of basketball the last few years. Restarted playing. He'd been in Louisiana with Bryce Washington and Frank Bartley. Started playing again in Thailand, I think, and now he's signed in Israel. It's a great move for him, and he's been playing well for his club team before he gets here, so that's also positive. Derek Barton, 17 points. Junior Eto, 10. Cody Demps, only 8 points over there. Travis Work with only 5, Amir Bell with 6. Obviously, a lot of problems at Beer Sheva, and the fans were calling for Rami's head, and that's what happened.
Yeah, it's really sad to see Rami leave. Great guy, always been really nice to us, and we're really disappointed. Sports Rabbi website and staff are disappointed to see him leave the league. Very colorful coach. Very entertaining to watch. He's worth getting a ticket just to watch him manage a game, and just to hear from him at the end of the game is always really interesting. And we hope he finds himself a great team to coach very soon.
Let's move on. We wish him the best of luck over there. Let's move on here to Hapoel Jerusalem, 89-77 winners against Hapoel Haifa. Jerusalem had an interesting game. You know, they took the lead. And then Haifa fought back, and it was, kind of got really close. They even took the lead themselves, Haifa. And then all of a sudden, Jerusalem just turned it on, and they said bye-bye. Retino Basuan, 28 points, 18 points for Jalen Adams, 11 for Adam Ariel, who was key with two big three-pointers in the last 5 minutes of that game. They really came back in the last 5 minutes and played extremely well, outscored Haifa 21-5. Sean Kilpatrick with 10 points. He scored all those 10 in like 2 minutes. It was 10 consecutive points for Jerusalem, which was crazy. Hapoel Haifa, 24 points for Kadeem Allen, 16 for Scotty James, 14 for James Thompson. Interesting news out of Jerusalem over here today. Sportando reports Sean Kilpatrick may be on his way out of Jerusalem. Definitely they're going to make some changes, Dove. There's no question about that. That wasn't the first name that you would have thought we would have heard from. The first name was, probably hopefully for Jerusalem management was going to be Thon Maker, and they bring in a center. But Sean Kilpatrick definitely, I don't know if he's fitting in the way that the team would want. I like him. I think he's a good player. I think he's a good pro. We're going to have to see that. They know that they have to make changes and they have to find balance. There's obviously a whole ownership issue going on, which you can, see at other locations. So there's definitely something going on behind the scenes there. So there's money issues also. Quick thoughts on that game and Hapoel Jerusalem, though.
Yeah, I mean, Hapoel Jerusalem, they have a lot of players that I value a lot and I think are very good. But again, they need to find a way to keep it rolling beyond just one game, one win. They need to create some kind of winning streak in order to gain some confidence in the roster they have and in the players they have.
No, that's for sure. I think that's what has to happen. We'll see. Yotam Halpern, do you think he's going to be the coach for the rest of the year?
No.
You don't think? Well, that's interesting. You don't think he's going to be the coach for the rest of the year?
No, not because he's not like decent at what he's doing for now, for someone who's not really a coach. But he is. I just think that Hapoel Jerusalem aren't going to want to have someone who's not a real coach for until the end of the season. There's still a lot that they can get out of this roster.
Interesting. Okay. I think he will be there for the rest of the season, but who knows? And as they say, time will tell. Next up, we have Nes Ciona. Four in a row they've won. 89-78 winners over Hapoel Gilboa Galil up in the Galilee. And again, it is the Frank Bartley and Deontay Garrett show. 20 and 19 points there each. 10 points for Tal Dunn. You know, I don't know exactly what happened over there. You know, 33 points for Tom Suarez, right? I mean, he was just amazing. 14 rebounds. He was named Player of the Week, of course, with the Sports Rabbi. Retina Basuan was number two, and we'll get to number three in a minute. But Tim Suarez has been great. One thing is that that's a player that Lior Lubin wanted to keep. Management wanted to release him. Obviously, Lior Lubin has been proven right here because all of a sudden, they've won four in a row. Gilboa Galil did not look good. Derek Cook, 16 points. Leonard Perante is a dozen points. 13 points, Ronnie Harrell. Gilboa Galil also lost some games that they kind of should have won at home. Good job by Lior Lubin, because we all thought he was a goner. And I got to tell you, at that 0-3 start, we were already sending him on the next boat out of Nes Ciona, and there he is, boy, showing everybody and us definitely wrong. He's doing a great job. I mean, to win four in a row, that's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really impressed with how they've been doing recently, and I think he's surprising everyone.
All right, finally, last but not least, Hapoel Holon. 89-77 winners over B'nai Herzliya. The big story out of this game, Eden Albert, who basically has not played all season long, comes in for an injured Niv Mizgov and literally lights a fire under the tails of Hapoel Holon after they had been down against B'nai Herzliya in that game. 14 points. He had 5 assists, 4 rebounds. Stephen Gray with 20 points. Michael Kaiser, 14 points, 10 rebounds, 11 points. Joe Ragland and... only had 3 assists, because really, you got to give a lot of credit to Eden Albert. He was running the offense to perfection. B'nai Herzliya, 19 points for Quinton Hooker, 13 points for Chris Babb, 12 points for Sean Dawson. Good stuff out of B'nai Herzliya. Kind of the referees did a bit of a screw job on them there, because Chananu Onuaku was teched out of that game and kind of really changed everything. Going forward, but at the end of the day, we're happy for Eden Albert. He was the third star for the Sports Rabbi this week, and happy for him and happy for Holon with the victory over there.
Yeah, Holon, I really think, are a good team. Just like Eilat, when they lose, I'm surprised, because they have a good home court and they're a very competitive team. And it's good to see Eden Albert get some good minutes and really have a positive impact on the team, which is really good for him.
Yeah, no, definitely. All right, we're on here with Dov Halichman, of course, wrapping up the Israeli basketball. Let's move over to the national team now and talk about that. Israel plays Poland Thursday night. Israel plays at Estonia Sunday night. Two big games coming up. Looking forward to both of them. And breaking news out of the Israel national team camp that the team has released both Amit Gershon and, surprisingly, Noam Dovrat. Not surprisingly because of his play, surprisingly, because of the fact that he is a Maccabi Rishon LeZion player, and he's been, you know, in the national team program, and he has been coached under Guy Gudas. Earlier, we also saw Netanel Artzi, another Rishon LeZion player, released as well from the national team. They're down to 14 players. Yamadar took in a full practice today. Last night, we had some press you know, spoke to Tomer Ginat, spoke to Jake Cohen, Gal Meckel spoke, as well as the coach Guy Gudas. You can read all that stuff on, of course, the Sports Rabbi website. We have an exclusive interview with Guy Gudas in Hebrew. It's going to be out in Hebrew in a day or so. In English, you're looking at a 4,500-word masterpiece, I might add. It's a great interview if you want to know who Guy Gudas is and you want to understand who the national team coach is of Israel. This gives you all the background on him. It was definitely a fun interview, and all of us took part in that in one way or another. That was a lot of fun. But Dov, on one hand, I'm surprised that Guy Gudas let go Noam Dovrat. On the other hand, he doesn't deserve to be on the national team. Let's be honest here. He's been awful this season, and really not his fault. He's coming back from a bad elbow injury, and it's obviously affecting him. There's no question. We've seen that in the games when he's played. Saw him a couple days ago, and he saw that, and you know, just not going to cut it when the national team has two huge World Cup games where you've got to win. I mean, in these games, it's not like the Eurobasket where, you know, so many teams get in. The World Cup, Israel was so close the last time around. They have more experience this time. I believe that they have the goods to do it, but you've got to win the games. And Guy Gudas knows the pressure's going to be on him right away here. You've got to win these two games.
Yeah, 100%. I'm really excited to see how the national team will look. It's too bad that Denny can't be there with them, but let's wait and see.
We'd love to have Denny play with them, of course, but then they would only be available in a window where the NBA isn't playing. The same thing with the whole EuroLeague, and there's issues there as well. The Polish team is coached by Igor Milicic. Igor Milicic was the coach he was just here in Israel with BM Stahl Ostrow, who played Hapoel Jerusalem in Champions League play. He takes control of the team. So it will be interesting to see him behind the bench after a long period of time and a first real chance of coaching a national team like Poland. Some of the top players for Poland are not going to be here. AJ Slaughter is not going to be here. One, Michael Sokolowski, the reporter, is that he's injured. He will not be here as well. So there's also Mateusz Ponitka won't be released for this game by Zenit. So there's a number of players that won't be taking part in this game, and that's good for Israel. Question is, they're going to have to come down now to a squad of 12. They have 14 players right now in camp. And then most probably they're going to have to drop two more players for that game in Estonia if they end up for sure taking John DiBartolomeo and Roman Sorkin. But that, you know, I would be surprised if they didn't, Dove. Thoughts about the roster situation? I mean, right now, the players that are left in camp, Adam Ariel, Gal Meckel, Roy Huber, Golan Gut, Guy Panini, Yam Madar, Rafi Menko, Jake Cohen, Itai Sagov, Idan Zalmanson, Nimrod Levy, Gabi Chachashvili, Tomer Ginat, and Yiftach Ziv. So two more players will probably be cut in essence, that they won't be on the roster for Poland. We'll find about those on Wednesday. Of course, if you follow at the Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, we'll have that for you there. Dov, what do you make of this roster? Obviously, Yovel Zussman and Tamir Blatt not available for these games, not being released by Alba Berlin, also for those second games.
Yeah, it's a pity, but hopefully the national team will be able to push through these two games. I really believe they can win both. And so do all Israeli basketball fans, I think. This national team is really good. The roster they have is really good, I believe. And I think they have some good players coming in decent form. Like, Yamadar is really getting good experience this year, which could be a real push forward.
Okay. So I would say this. If you had to look at the two players that aren't going to be dressed, the initial thought would be Gabi Chachashvili, who is an up-and-coming young center playing for Galil Elyon. Another possibility would be Golan Gut and Roy Huber, who's really making his first foray into the national team. I think a lot of it also stands on, is Yam Madar going to be 100% fit? If Yam Madar is not 100% fit, he won't play, and Roy Huber will probably be that player just because they want to have another point guard in there. Not that he will probably get any minutes. On the other hand, if Yam Madar is fit, you'd think Roy Huber will be out. Gabi Tsatsashvili probably will be out, and they'll keep Golan Gud, has been part of the system. Though I could see them keeping Tsatsashvili in there for this game to have an extra big, like a really extra lengthy big man that they'll get in that second game if they do, you know, take Roman Sorkin, which I would think they will. You know, he kind of fits that Roman Sorkin mold. You do have other centers over there. Jake Cohen can play center, which he's done many times. Itai Segev can play center, if, you know, obviously is the Hapoel Jerusalem center. And then Idan Zalmanson, the whole Hapoel Tel Aviv center. Kind of interesting. I think perhaps you may see Tsatsashvili, even with the team traveling and not play also, just to give him, you know, this is the next generation of players, and to give them that opportunity to play with the national team and to be around those players, if it's Guy Pannini, if it's Jake Cohen, if it's Gal Mekeldov.
Yeah, I think it's great that there's a mix of young, upcoming talents in the national team and also players who are very experienced. Not always do you get that type of combination in the roster, and I think that's really, really valuable moving forward for the national team towards bigger tournaments to come and not just these qualification-type of games.
All right, there you have it. Dov Halifman, where can people find you?
At Dovster9.
At Dovster9. Of course, me, at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. SportsRabbi.com. For the latest and greatest news in Israeli sports, you can check us out, of course, in English and in Hebrew. We are all over the place. We are all over the basketball scene. This is a lot of fun, Dov. Thanks for coming on board, and we'll speak to you soon.
Sure. Speak to you next time.